the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
Amen. Amen.
Today is the Feast of the Epiphany, the holy day, the feast day of the Epiphany. It always falls on January 6th. It's a treat when it falls on a Sunday, and we have an opportunity to celebrate it in its fullest in our Sunday worship together. Epiphany is one of the seven principal feast days in our liturgical calendar, the highest in the hierarchy of holy days. And all that means, at least for me, is that it is probably worth pondering what it is that this particular day might have to teach us, what the celebration of this particular day might invite us to ponder. Epiphany, along with Christmas, is part of a coherent package, really, that celebrates what is theologically called the Incarnation, God's Incarnation. The Incarnation, which is that human experience born out century after century, that in Jesus, in the baby Jesus, in the man Jesus, in some wondrous way, God was and is present. God was born into our world. God took on human flesh, became incarnate. God continues to be an intimate and active part of human existence. The Incarnation. In the Eastern churches, all of those churches that we would roughly group and think of as the Orthodox churches, in Eastern churches, actually, the Epiphany, the feast day, the holy day of the Epiphany, is the primary feast that celebrates the Incarnation, God's Incarnation. And in the Orthodox churches, the emphasis of this Epiphany celebration is primarily Jesus' baptism, that time when the scriptures say that a voice broomed forth from heaven and named Jesus God's own, God's beloved. In the Western churches, all of those churches descended in one way or another from Rome, which includes us. In the Western churches, Christmas has become the primary feast of the Incarnation, the primary holy day on which we celebrate God among us, God incarnate with us. And as we in the Western church celebrate Christmas, we read and hear Luke's account of Jesus' birth, with the shepherds and the angels, and whatever awareness grew among them that this child was holy, that this child was special. For us, the celebration of Epiphany focuses primarily on the arrival of the Magi. And so it was that we heard the Gospel reading this morning from Matthew, which talks about the arrival of the Magi at the manger in Bethlehem, and the wonder that greeted them there. This story that we heard from Matthew, this familiar account of the coming of the Magi, there is virtually zero historical certainty about this story. No historical links that we can attach to this story that Matthew tells. Matthew actually in the Greek calls them Magi. Wise men was the translation that we heard this morning, But that Greek word magi probably indicates that they were Zoroastrian astrologers. There's no indication in Matthew that they were three. No indication that they were kings. And no indication of where they came from, except generally in the East. It's kind of fun to look back historically over the ways that the Magi have been depicted over the centuries. Those depictions are inventive and highly variable. There are some early depictions of the Magi in art in which there are 10 or 12 of them. There are also accounts in which those 10 or 12 are all named, all have histories and works and places of origin. It is a story that has captivated Christians over the centuries and invited this sort of inventive embroidering of the story that Matthew tells. Raymond Brown was one of the primary New Testament scholars of our day. He died just recently. One of the primary New Testament scholars, and he's written a book called The Birth of the Messiah that examines in some detail both the Lucan and the Matthean accounts of Jesus' birth. He writes about the Magi. He says that in the East, in the Eastern churches, the earliest known attempt to identify the Magi, to give them names, comes from the 4th to the 6th century, somewhere in there. And in this first attempt to identify the Magi, they are identified as Hormizda, the king of Persia, Yazdegerd, the king of Saba, and Perozda, the king of Sheba. There is a later, possibly 8th century work from the Western Church that describes the Magi in terms that would be more familiar to us today. But remember that there is no historical or scriptural basis for any of these descriptions. This 8th century work from the Western Church says, the Magi were the ones who gave gifts to the Lord. The first is said to have been Melchior, an old man with white hair and a long beard, who offered gold to the Lord as king. The second, Gaspar by name, was young and beardless and ruddy complexioned. And he honored the Lord as God by his gift of incense, an oblation worthy of divinity. The third, black-skinned and heavily bearded, named Balthazar, by his gift of myrrh, testified to the Son of Man who was to die. Matthew does, of course, identify the gift, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. This story, like so many stories in the Bible, is not offered to us as a history lesson. So the fact that we have no historical proof for this story, for me at least, is not significant. It is not offered to us as a history lesson. Factual historicity is not the point of this story and of many others that the scriptures offer to us. This story has persisted and been treasured over the centuries, not because it portrays accurately some historical event. There may be traces of historical truth in it, or there may not. This story has persisted and been treasured because it portrays a truth of human experience. It portrays something that is true about human experience in our relationship with God. something that is true about how we know and experience God. In fact, this story conveys more than one truth, I think, about the nature of our relationship with God. The first truth that this story conveys is that epiphanies happen. Epiphanies happen in our human lives. We experience epiphanies. The word epiphany, as you may know, means a coming to awareness, a usually sudden recognition or sudden realization of something that you did not see or recognize before. But in an instant, you come to a new recognition, a new awareness. You have an epiphany. When we use the word in church, we are usually speaking in particularly about a sudden recognition of God's holy presence in our midst, with us. We have these aha moments when we realize that God is here. Here. Epiphany. We recognize and realize that God is here with us. The people who have been the church over the centuries have treasured this particular story, this story of the Magi, in part because the Magi had no reason to have an epiphany, no expectation of coming to a sudden awareness of God's presence with them. It's very important to remember in this story that the Magi were foreigners, strangers, come from afar, Gentiles, not Jews. This was not their story. This was not their prophecy. It was not their expectation. When they got to Bethlehem, they didn't even speak the language. But they were drawn to Bethlehem. Something drew them. And when there, aha, they had some sort of recognition of the holiness and wonder that they encountered in that stable beneath the star. They encountered the mystery, the wonder that is the incarnation. God's holiness, God's presence, God's divinity, somehow mysteriously present in that baby. The 12th century mystic Meister Eckhart has said, and I don't know if he was speaking specifically about the theology of the incarnation or not, but the saying fits. Eckhart has said, "Between God and you, there is no between." That may sound confusing and cryptic, but think about it. Between God and you, there is no between. That's what the incarnation is about. Between God and us, there is no between. The Magi discovered that when they entered that stable in Bethlehem. And it is still true. God is here with us. There is no space separating us from God. And we still today can recognize and know God's presence with us here. Epiphanies still happen. We as human beings still have epiphanies, these moments of aha when we recognize with an indisputable clarity that God is with us, that there is no space that separates us from God. the divinity present and offered to us through Jesus is still present with us. So the story about the Magi teaches us, shows us something true about human experience across the centuries up into our day. Epiphanies happen. But I want to circle back in closing to the specific story of the Magi, because this story points, I think, to a perhaps broader and yet wondrous truth about human experience with respect to God. Remember again what I think it is easy for us to forget because this story has become so familiar to us. Remember the unimaginable, unpredictable, improbable, unexplainable fact that that particular epiphany took place, that the Magi experienced an epiphany in Bethlehem, that they came and experienced an epiphany. These foreigners, these strangers who traveled so far. It's unimaginable, it's unpredictable, it's improbable, and it's unexplainable. It's beyond wonder, even. This story reminds us that with God in our midst, in our relationship with God, things that are beyond wonder can be true. Things which are unexplainable, unimaginable, unpredictable can happen, can be true. And Matthew reminds us that when the Magi got there, they were filled with joy. The fruits of Epiphany are joy. That's a truth of this story as well. Amen.
Amen.